This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Welcome, everyone, to yet another episode of Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z. I'm Matt Fonzel, and owning our story and loving ourselves through that process is the bravest thing we'll ever do. That and more after a word from our sponsor, Knapp Autotech Training and Pico Technology. So, are you looking for the right training provider that offers cutting-edge courses to hone your automotive skills? Well, let Knapp Autotech take you to the next level. Go to knappautotech.com for more details about classes near you. Are you chasing elusive automotive problems? Pico Technology empowers you to see what's really happening. Pinpoint faults in sensors, wiring, and components with unmatched accuracy. PicoScope oscilloscopes transform your diagnostic capabilities. Visit PicoAuto.com, that's PicoAuto.com, and revolutionize your diagnostics today. I've been really putting this off. I've had this idea for this episode for a long time. It's about my least favorite subject, me. And I keep coming back to it because I think it's important. Not because it's me, but because of the subject matter. I guess to just get straight to it is I have a very, very difficult time being proud of myself. I just don't take a lot of pride in what I do, probably even who I am, whatever that means. Like, that's not trying to project anything, like just as a person. So yeah, it's really just through life events, thinking, which I do, we all do, but I just find myself thinking about just how things are intertwined. And then, like I said, life events, just stuff that I've been reading, stuff that pops up on my feeds. An episode I did a while back with Bob Hype, you know, one of my really best friends, Bob Hype, in Apex, like a couple of years ago. He had brought it up with, you know, stuff that was going on in his life and had happened leading up to that, how he was in the shame tank. I think I've been in the shame tank since childhood. So really, that's the fundamental problem, is because of that, because of shame, because of just that lack of pride, it's put me in, I don't want to say like precarious positions. It's not like I just got so bad, but things probably could have been better. And that, again, it's like, that's so bad. I don't want to blow anything out of proportion, good or bad, either end of the spectrum. It's just early on, even if I knew what my skill set was and my capability was versus others within the shop I was working at and the surrounding area, I was not a good advocate for myself when negotiating compensation or whatnot. And that's led me to lots and lots of resentment. And like, historically, and I'm speaking almost right now about just working and employment, being an employee, because of that, I would develop resentment towards my employer, and it would manifest itself in usually stonewalling. Like, I just get to the point where I couldn't look at them and talk to them. I kid you not. People that worked with me saw that firsthand. It's like I couldn't even make my mouth work and finally get drug into the office or a phone call and boom, just not even go off on them. Like, I wouldn't go off on them. I'd just spill my guts and they'd be like, oh, well, here, let's do this. What if we did that? And I'd be happy for a while. And then it would just kind of start over again because I took so little pride in what I did, what I brought to the table, and stuff like that. Like, ultimately, I'm my own worst enemy because I wouldn't focus at all on what I did well. I could just pick myself apart with what I didn't do well. I don't know if it's so much perfectionism. Like, I don't know if it's quite that, but certainly shoot holes in whatever successes I had. Like, you know, whatever that may be, like knock that diagnosis out of the ballpark. Oh, yeah, I could have got there faster. Or yeah, I misread this piece of data. I misunderstood this. I actually diagnosed this in spite of being wrong about how this really worked. Like, I could just undo all of it. And don't get me wrong, I think there's value in that honesty, but I didn't take it as I made a stupid mistake or I made a mistake. It's, I'm an idiot. I'm stupid. I'm such an idiot. And I think anyone that listens to me talk, that those are words I say a lot, like, I'm such an idiot. And I believe it. It wasn't just work. It's relationships too. Just any level of criticism, even constructive, loving criticism, I would take very personally. Like, you are attacking me. And I would get so defensive, be able to come up with excuses, explanations. That wasn't the issue. And it wasn't even like it was a personal attack, but I took it. So then boom, you're into defensiveness. Boom. It leads to an argument or stonewalling. Like, I don't know, just stonewall the person I'm, whatever relationship that may be. It could be romantic or it could be friends, stuff like that. Just shut them out. They didn't exist. They didn't have to exist. Just terribly unhealthy. And it was rooted in shame. I suppose it goes back to your childhood. And I guess I'm not sitting here pointing my fingers at my parents. I think they raised me the best way they knew how, which, got to be careful how you word that stuff sometimes. There's a lot of people out there doing the best they can, but they don't do anything to really try to improve themselves. And at that time, it's not like information was that available, right? There wasn't as many studies as there are now with just the psychology going on with home environments. And there weren't accessing that wasn't nearly as easy, right? We just have such access to good information. We have a lot of access to horrible, horrible information, but we have access, easy access to really good information if we want to. And I don't know that I'm so much saying that to defend them. They took stuff from when they were kids and tried to do better. And I think unwittingly and using shame. And I don't think they knew it. I don't think they could have named it. And they weren't sitting there like inspiring with it. Or other parents might ask them how they would handle this or that. Or, you know, wow, your kids are pretty well behaved. How do you do that? Oh, we shame them. They wouldn't know. They wouldn't be able to name it like that. Or put a name on it, or, you know, whatever phrasing you want to use. From their perspective, like, both of them, discipline for them was the woodshed. Like, literally a leather strap or a belt and the woodshed, and you would go get yours. I never got that. That never happened. Corporal punishment was very minimal, very minimal. But yeah. Failing them was a big, big problem for me. I was very, very easy to deal with if they just had a look of disappointment. Disgust is maybe a little bit of a creative leap, or that's how I interpreted it, was they're just disgusted with me. And that was a very good way to get me to snap to attention and start making a course correction or whatever. But that just leads to a lot of things where a lot of deflection with attempted humor. I hate to say it, like, I try to deflect with humor because that assumes whatever I'm doing is remotely funny. But I try to lighten the mood. I try to deflect it softly. And a technical term, I guess, foreboding joy, meaning if something good happens to me, I downplay it and I wait for something else to offset it. You know what I mean? Like, if I knock some car out of the ballpark, I'm waiting for the next car to kick my ass. Or for it to come back, like something. Like, if it's too good to be true, then it probably is. And for me, too good to be true is even just something that could just be good and true. Not too good. It's not unreasonable. It's almost a good question for Margaret would probably be, is if that would be considered delusion. I don't think it is, because theoretically it is possible that car could come back. It's very possible the next car could kick my tail. It's rather unlikely, but that's in the back of my head. It's just very harsh criticism, very hard on myself, very critical. I don't take compliments well, and I don't think I'm alone. I think there's a lot of us out there that do that. A lot of us do it just because we crank it up to an extreme to be funny, to entertain ourselves or entertain the group. Also, I suppose because of that, people that do display pride or have a certain level of confidence, think well of themselves, not even highly, just think well of themselves, even if they're accurate about it. You almost find that annoying, like off-putting. I don't know if it's jealousy or just envy, like, God, they're just so sure of themselves, or they talk pretty well about themselves. That must be rough, or what an arrogant prick. And it might not be true. That's kind of what I do. That's kind of, to say, my story. I think if those of that know me or are around me, if you watch or listen, I think at Asta, Tracy got a big, big dose of it in the podcast booth where people would say nice things to me and immediately I would downplay it. I would find a way to deflect it. I would find a way to make a funny comment, the check's in the mail, you know, something like that, or you need to get out more, anything to kind of wind that down and then just label it modesty, healthy modesty. And that isn't what it is. That's not what it is at all. And that's a problem. That's a problem that caused me to end up in scenarios where I've undervalued myself, didn't advocate for myself, waited for resentment, and then, I don't know, just waiting for somebody to recognize it, waiting for somebody else to go and assign value to it, rather than me assigning value to it or trying to find out the value of it. So yeah, it's delayed things. If an ownership stake in a business or shop or more money or better compensation, whatever it may be, not advocating for myself has put me behind. I think you could make the case versus others of similar or less skill. And I don't mean that like the employers were nefarious, like at all, but I didn't help myself at all. I just, in negotiating processes, I would have a very difficult time sitting there rattling off what I bring to the table. Even if I could, logically and accurately, it would burn my mouth to say the words, figuratively. But it's very off-putting. Very did not like the taste of that. Don't like the feeling of that. And then, yeah, personal relationships. You end up not being such a safe place. If somebody has a problem with somebody else, you're great. Wonderful person to talk to. But if they got a problem with you, or in my case, they got a problem with me, that was not a safe place to come and talk. That was not, even the thickest kid gloves with criticism were met with a harsh response, very defensive. So that doesn't lead to the healthiest of relationships. And I'm not saying my relationship or relationships have been so toxic, but it certainly didn't help make them healthy. Yeah, that realization. God, it just sucked, man. It just sucked. And then what do you do about it? I mean, honestly, it's kind of wake up. You got to be able to categorically name some things worthy of feeling good about. And I struggled with it, but all in all, I think it was a really important thing to do. So some of the things I am proud of, that I'm proud of myself about, I think I've alluded to, is one is like the spectrum of friends that I have, be it like just personal friends that call and talk, text, message, all the different things, regularly interact with. I am very proud of the spectrum that they represent, just in all sorts of categories, like male, female, in between, politically left, right, in the middle, different variations, you know, whatever, religious, not religious, you name it, racially, all of it. Very diverse. I love it. I absolutely love it. The biggest weapon against the lack of pride, it's probably, I think, being grateful, gratefulness, gratitude, that I am so grateful for that. And what is my role in that, right? Like, I guess I'm proud of myself in that I can have that and I'm okay with that. And I can have people that I disagree with on many things or some things or almost everything or almost nothing and be care about them and they care about me. And I know that they're just people I like to be around and they're good people.
NAPA Auto Tech training sessions are being conducted day and night in a town near you. This training caters to every level within your organization, be it a mechanical assistant, a mechanical specialist, a technology specialist, or a driver safety calibration specialist. Imagine a one-stop shop training partner in NAPA Auto Tech that will lead your team to a path to greatness. Autotech's entry-level build-a-tech classes convert the untapped potential of your new hires into money-making mechanical specialists. Autotech's higher-level tech update classes introduce specialists to the world of ever-changing technologies, which prevents your shop from getting technologically stagnant. Remember, if you're not moving forward, you're falling behind. And, turning to the front of the store, the Autotech Service Advisor class is an awesome way to hone your client advocate skill set, ultimately benefiting the customer through an improved vehicle repair experience. But it doesn't stop there. Imagine an electric vehicle class that takes your specialist well past the mundane, yet necessary, safety topics. Well, it's here. Autotech's EV Ready Training is a week-long curriculum that takes participants through a hands-on experience involving hybrids and electric vehicles. The session kicks off with the use of PPE and proper tooling while touching on required OSHA regulations. Then, the students dive into the lab vehicles to gain knowledge of the common high-voltage components on EV and hybrid vehicles and their function. Attendees will be taken on a path exposing them to different electric vehicle manufacturers to compare component form and location. Additionally, information about Level 1 and Level 2 charging systems will be included, along with a quick look at DC-to-DC charging. The operation and maintenance of subsystems are explored, including the different modes of Tesla operations, and so much more. So what are you waiting for? Commit to taking your business to the next level with NAPA Autotech Training. Electric and hybrid vehicles are here, and with them, a new era of diagnostics. Don't get left behind. Pico Technologies EV Diagnostic Kits are your all-in-one solution to safely and efficiently service any electric or hybrid vehicle. From comprehensive high-voltage system analysis and insulation testing to guided step-by-step procedures, Pico puts the power of confident repairs right at your fingertips. Future-proof your shop, boost your efficiency, and become the go-to expert for the next generation of cars. Visit PicoAuto.com today. That's PicoAuto.com. I guess to go a little dark, I'm really proud of how I handled when Benjamin was born. He would have been, my ex-wife's and I, our child that passed away, he wasn't going to live. And I told that story a while ago. I think it was something to do with silver linings. And there's a story to it and all the things. And there is a point, you know, where we're in the OR because they have to do an emergency C-section. And because of what was wrong, there was no fluid. They had to do an emergency C-section. The doctors and surgeons and nurses, nobody knows what I know or what my ex knew. But she was obviously super stressed. They didn't knock her out. They, you know, she wasn't sedated, but she had an epidural and just absolutely stressed out. A lot of pain leading up to the epidural. So yeah, it would be a lot to expect her to be in heavily involved. Plus, I mean, it's surgery, right? So they got the blankets all over everywhere and barriers up. And when they got him out, that they're racing, they're working very hard to save him. But that couldn't happen. It wasn't going to happen. But he was alive. He was born alive. I had heard the doctors talking about Mayo 2 is in the air. For us, Mayo Clinic, that means, and not even Mayo Clinic. Mayo Clinic is nearby. Rochester, Minnesota is where it was started. Mayo 2 is the helicopter. They have two helicopters. Mayo 2 is on the way. It's in the air. So for me, that immediately created a nightmare scenario of the baby will be an hour south of us and going to die. His mother is going to be up here. She won't be able to travel. And he's going to die an hour away. That seemed wildly unreasonable to me. So I walked over and told them that they need to stop, that they couldn't save him. They were not going to be able to save him. And honestly, if they did, what kind of a life would he have? It would be all sorts of horrible. So just being able to kind of keep my shit together and do that, just ask them if they could get him to where he could meet his mom, that would be just wonderful. And they did that. And we got a few hours with him. My parents got to see him, my sister, my brother-in-law, all our kids got to see him. I should have been really proud of that. The closest thing I got to that was I showed up at the implement, my grandparents' farm implement dealer, that I had walked in the door and my grandpa pulled me aside and said,
I've heard your dad was saying, and just saying that you handled this really, really well, and that, you know, we're really, really proud of you. And that meant a lot. But at no point was there anything internal to me going like, yeah, you know what? I handled that like a badass. I didn't. I still don't. I'm proud that I could do that, that I had awareness or my wits about me, whatever it was. And there was a lot of like preparation. Don't get me wrong. Like knowing what was going to happen, just not when, or assuming that it was going to happen later on, allowed me to have the, I don't want to say a script, but some bullet points. And then I was in a situation where I could use them and did use them and needed to use them and feel like I did the right thing. So that's a big one. Another one off the wall. Seriously, off the wall. Like after my divorce, I was positive. And I guess I talked about this a little bit with Brandon Steckler early, like one of the early episodes. But I was sure that I was going to be single for a long time. I was sure of it. I know when it was before the divorce was finalized or anything like that, with no court stuff, no papers yet. But when I had kind of asked my ex, like, this is the last time I'm going to ask you. I myself am interested in doing whatever it takes to save this, to fix this. But if you say no and you want the divorce, understand that I will immediately now want the divorce. And she said she wanted the divorce. And I just remember standing in the bathroom, looking in the mirror, going, you're 37 years old. You're 70, 80 pounds overweight. You have a minivan, three kids that you're going to have primarily. They're going to live with you. So you're not going to have a lot of time. You're not going to have any money. You're going to be single for a long time. Like, you know, you did not hit the genetic lottery when it came to looks. So you're not walking in, and it's not going to be like we bought a zoo where all the other single moms are lined up with lasagna. So that wasn't going to happen. But because of all of it, the stress of it all or whatever, however I respond to that, probably massive amounts of anxiety, weight melted off. I dropped at least 70 pounds. And I have nothing to measure that on other than one time at the doctor for a checkup. I think I weighed 285 or 280, and I had went in. I knew I had strep throat. I wasn't diagnosed, but really sore throat. I'd gone in. Of course, they have to weigh you. And I remember being scared to get on that scale because I didn't know what to expect. Like, I didn't want to have my heart set on or just feeling an expectation. I didn't want to have an expectation that I couldn't hit. Meaning, if I was hoping that I would weigh 225 pounds and I got on that scale and I weighed 230, that I would be crushed. So I just remember being so scared to get on that scale. And then finally when I did and it came up at like 215, not being happy, being relieved. I was relieved. I wasn't happy. I was relieved. But that's not the point of that. The point of that was is weight had dropped off, clothes didn't fit anymore. And I wasn't looking to get into a relationship, but I was looking for some sort of validation, if you will, that I wasn't going to be alone forever or for very long. For very long was a vague. I mean, that's vague. What does that even mean for very long? I don't know. A year, 2 years? I don't know. So I had asked a couple of people out and they all said yes. So the third one was the mom to one of my daughter's friends. She had been single for a while. I knew that her experiences with men weren't the greatest. And I guess I don't say I was thinking that strategically now she's going to see me as a superior choice. So we got to give the good guy a shot here. I guess that's not what I mean by that. Just I guess that I knew she was looking for dating. And so I had asked her out and she said yes. And we kind of hit it off. But then after a while, like, there's red flags. Normally I would just try to fix them. I would save her, right? I'll show her the way. But I didn't. I got out of it. I was not proud of myself about that. I really had little feeling about it other than I guess I was disgusted with myself for not seeing the red flags sooner. Or That was a dumb idea, or it was somehow critical of me. Rather than going like, you know what? It took you a while. And by a while, like we're talking weeks. This is not a long-term relationship. I don't know if it went on for 2 months, maybe three tops. No, it didn't. It wasn't even that long. Yeah, maybe a month tops. Yeah, it was like a month tops. The red flag showed and you got out of it. All it cost you was a carpet cleaner. Borrowed my parents' carpet cleaner to shampoo some of her carpets. Not because of that. They were just dirty. Jeez. Anyways, yeah, I had left them there and left the carpet cleaner there. And it's kind of when I decided that this was not going to go. If I play this movie forward, I'm not going to like the end. And it's not going to be a very good ending. So I got out of it and should have been kind of proud of myself. Didn't need to go gloating about it. But in the back of my head, why couldn't I have been just kind of like, yeah, good job, man. Like, I don't think you could have done that before. So this is a big deal. Couldn't do it, didn't do it. But in reality, I should be. And from a professional level, like I am proud of this podcast and this platform and being able to talk about what I like to talk about and having people are actually interested in it and proud that my voice is something somebody would actually care to hear or an opinion. I have an opinion they'd actually care to hear about. Like that, I'm really proud of that. And also just I feel like being able to evolving and expanding what I can do from just being pretty good at drivability and electrical and just thinking that was the end all be all to be able to keep evolving into so many things like the maybe the more theoretical side of things to be able to be a presenter and maybe even considered an educator and to be able to be involved in development of equipment through either just talking to people, beta testing, and then evolving into circuit board level repairs. Not that I'm so great at it yet. I'm better than I was. I keep getting better at it. EEPROM. And so, yeah, I guess I'm kind of, not kind of, like I'm really proud of that stuff. I guess I've been rambling along here telling you this, not to just give you more insight into my life, although maybe that isn't fundamentally bad, but that if you're like me, or even a little bit like that, where you just have a horrible time thinking highly of yourself, that it is very common for you to talk to yourself in a way that you would never talk to somebody else. Or if somebody talked to you that way, another person, you might be ready to throw down, but you talk to yourself that way and worse all the time, that I made a mistake. I did something stupid. Instead of that, I did something really stupid. It's I am stupid. If that's the way you talk to yourself, that's a problem. It's shame. And the way out is, I guess, honesty, which is, I guess, that's just been an ongoing theme for the entire length of this series of podcasts, the entire show. Just be honest. Honest with yourself. Honest with people close to you, the people that you, your most trusted friends or loved ones that you can talk to about anything, that you should be open about this. And I guess part of that honesty is you're the only one of you that has ever existed in this universe. And you are the only one of you that will ever exist in this universe, ever. And that you have a ton of value and that you are, I don't want to say special. That's kind of been run into the ground, right? You know, kind of like culture and communication, that's special. We've run that into the ground to where it's just almost causes the hairs on the back of your neck to stand up out of annoyance when people say that. But kind of like the quote at the beginning, like learning to embrace yourself as a whole, like truly loving everything about you, good, bad, or otherwise. And you can always work on the quote unquote bad, but don't sit there thinking I'm a bad person. I did something bad. I did something dumb, but I'm not dumb. Yeah, just cut yourself a little slack. It's hard to do. This might still be a scenario, do as I say, not as I do yet, but I'm working on the part where it's do what I say and what I do. I'm better at the doing part than I have ever been. And I think the benefits I've seen already at work is my relationship with my boss is already improved and my marriage has improved dramatically. Not that it was just so horrible. It wasn't. I would have told you it was so great. But for her, it wasn't horrible, but it wasn't great. It wasn't that great. And now it's pushing into great because she can come to me about me. That's a big deal. It's something she hasn't really had. Maybe when we very first started dating, right? Because they're all putting on your best selves. But after a while, that wasn't there. That wasn't an option. Like if she had to talk to me about something, she better brace herself. And now that's just a non-factor. So I guess I'm kind of proud of that. And when it comes down to brass tacks, if you really are struggling to think better of yourself, to cut yourself some slack, to really embrace yourself as you are and take the steps you want to take to be who you want to be, don't hesitate to reach out for help with a counselor or a therapist. Like it's not, you're broken. We all need help pointing out our blind spots. We all need that person who's kind of unbiased on our team, but really not biased. They're not in it. If you're in Minnesota, you can check out Equilibrium Therapy Services with Margaret Light. And I say that actually quite seriously. She is in Minnesota. She is licensed for Minnesota. I'm not positive about Wisconsin, or just seek out help. There's no weakness in that. It's a massive, massive flex to be able to go, I can't do this on my own. I need someone to help point out my blind spots and then work on those blind spots. That is how I will leave you. Actually, I kind of hope this doesn't hit home with many of you, but if it does, I'm glad it does. And I hope that it helps do something positive or lead to something very positive. If you do run into me and you do say something nice to me, I will try very hard to say thank you, even though it might follow a downplay. I mean, I got to be me. No, seriously, I got to get better about accepting compliments. So thank you so much for listening. Thank you so very much for the emails and the messages. And those of you I got to run into at Asta and shoot the breeze with you a little bit, that was great. Maybe see you out at Apex in Vegas here in a few weeks. And also, I'd like to thank our sponsors, Napa Auto Tech Training and Pico Technology. And then also just thank the Automotive Repair Podcast Network for making this all possible, for hosting this, putting up with me. They should be proud of themselves. Until next time, take care.
You've been listening to Matt Fonslow, diagnosing the aftermarket A to Z on the Aftermarket Radio Network. Follow Matt on your favorite listening app. He's very interested in what you have to say. Let him know what you'd like him to cover and come on the show. Matt is all for advancing the aftermarket. Find Matt Fonslow on social media and connect or on aftermarketradionetwork.com.